red grenadine. Bottle was empty, but the liquor was clean.
Hi, John's LA. Welcome. Very special. Used that before. Got a great guest tonight. Before I bring him out, I want to talk a little bit about Michael Sam, the homosexual player who plays for, who played this past season for Missouri, who now came out this year. Now it's just, oh, we're inundated with the draft stocks and the combine and stuff. But Michael Sam went out and did a 17 reps, 225, and a 4.91 40-yard dash, which, no bullshit, about equivalent to my numbers. Other than the height, weight, and playmaking ability, 17 reps, not a ton, and 4.91. He has invited everybody not to draft him. And I don't understand why anybody would draft him at this point, to be honest with you. I just, there's two, why would you, okay, you got a guy like Reggie White, who is arguably the greatest defensive lineman of all time, who was a religious man and hated the gays. I'm not saying that's right. But why would you put somebody on your team, bring that dynamic into the locker room where you have somebody who may be ultra-religious on your team already and then offends them, and that guy's going to start popping off, or something as innocuous as coming out and just saying the word fag, fucking, y'all, you fag, get out of here. And someone like Michael Sam could turn around and make that into a big deal. It can make that an ESPN story right away. So why would you invite that in unless Michael Sam was just so much better than everybody else that you can invite that in to your locker room? I just don't, especially with an output like that. 17 reps at 225, not impressive. 4.91, not impressive. Unless, you know, in Indianapolis, there was a slow thumb trying to get him a slow time, but that shit's electronically calculated. But enough of that. I don't want to get in too much because I have a guest on tonight, and we have a lot to talk about. Let me bring on the head coach of the Triangle Razorbacks in Denmark, Rude Star, CJ the DJ, former Eagle Scout, former coach at Pomona Pizza, former G-Town, no, present G-Town G, the G-Town G, and a great friend, CJ Robinson. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Dave, just give me one more minute here. I'm trying to Facebook a short 30-second video I just filmed to you. So I'm posting it on my Facebook for my thousands of friends and followers, you know, because I'm so damn popular.
Which about 1,000 more than I have.
Well, hopefully you might actually have some listeners and downloads after this episode.
Because of you, finally.
Triangle. I guarantee you, there's people in Italy right now going, what the hell is Skid Row Studios? But thanks to me, there's people in Milan and Rome and Sicily, you know, right now. Stop. They're just checking out you, your show.
Stop name dropping. This is Los Angeles, California, son. This is the third most.
Yeah, where I'm born and raised.
No, you're G-Town G.
All I know is you gave me something before the show, and I'm just, yeah. It's a Tom Brady special, as we call it.
It's an ammonia inhalant.
Yeah.
Okay, Tom Brady does before every game, which I do.
I prefer nitrous oxide, but I'll take this.
And I have them all the time on me because I'm a PE teacher. If a girl or anybody, for that matter, passes out.
Yeah, you got this stuff ready to
it's
go.
It's smelling salt. Okay, that's great. Should knock you right now. Bring you back up all the time. Amazon.
Hey, do our engineers need a shot of Crown Royal? Because I brought in that flask of Crown. Oh, you're good to go? Huh? What about homeboy behind you? I saw him lean back. You're good? All right. So I want to make sure our engineers and people controlling this is all set.
Or a shot of ammonia, which is
a shot of ammonia.
A shot of ammonia, a little bit more politically correct.
Just so everybody knows listening to this, we did a little minor bar crawl before the show. I think we started at the Down and Out, and then we ended up at Hank's. You know, two classic places here in downtown L.A.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, back in the day, it was a line outside to get into Hank's. But it was all homeless guys trying to get in there because you can get like a 50-cent drink there, you know. Mm-hmm. We're talking, you know, long time ago. We're talking the 80s.
Yeah.
We did that tour, a little tribute tour before we started tonight's show. So.
Back in the Eagle Scout days.
Yeah, well, you know, I was wearing my Boy Scout uniform when I'd come to these bars, you know. And, you know, I'd do my Eagle Scout and Boy Scout duties and buy drinks. So.
Triangle Razorbacks.
Oh,
the
geez.
Head coach of the Triangle Razorbacks.
I know. I leave in a week and like 2 days.
A week and 2 days.
Yeah.
For the listeners, for my 6 listeners, CJ is now the head coach of a team in Denmark, the professional, and I hate using this term, American football team, because it's football.
Yeah.
Team in Denmark. What is a, you get a job like that day one? What is the process from the scratch?
Well, there's a website called europlayers.com. And basically it's for Americans who want to play and possibly coach in Europe. Since the mid 70s, most European countries from Spain, Austria, France, Italy, England, Denmark, Finland, Sweden, Norway, Germany, they all started football leagues. And we're talking American football here. Pads, shoulder helm, you know, shoulder pads, helmets, you know, not what I consider soccer. I call it global football. But if you look up in Wikipedia, football is any sport that's not played on a horse. You know, so it's like it can be argued that, you know, blah, blah, blah. All I'm saying is football is any sport not playing on a horse. So we got soccer or calcio, as the Italians call it. Anyway, I got hooked up with Euro Players, and I circulated my resume, got a job offered to me from a team in Milan called the Siemens Milano.
That was the team that offered Tim Tebow a big contract, right?
Yeah, they offered him a contract here a few months ago for $200,000 to come play for 4 months. Which, you know, it's a nice contract, but...
it's football. Yeah, it's real football. Bullets are flying, so to speak. You know,
the thing about European football is each team can have as many Americans on the team as they want, but you can only play 2 to maybe 3 players per game.
Per down? Game?
Yeah, per game. So, or per... Like, on the offensive side, you can only have 2, and on the defensive side, you can only have 2.
You can't rotate them in?
Yeah, but when I was in Italy in 2011, we could play 3 at a time, but I think that's changed. I'm not sure. But I think the general consensus for European football is that you can only play 2 Americans at a time. So when I was in Italy, though, I was able to play 3. So I had my quarterback, Eric Anderkevic from, he played at... was Long Island University, also known as CW Post.
And we brought, I played against him. Team I played in coach against.
Good program. And he brought his receiver, Andrew Kell, with him, who also played a defensive back. See, that's the thing with my Americans is they didn't really have a choice. They were playing both ways, with the exception of the quarterback, because I didn't want the quarterback playing free safety. As much as Eric wanted to play it, I wasn't going to put him out there just because – you know, it's your quarterback. You don't want him getting hurt on defense, and then what do you do when he gets hurt, you know? So I did have a middle linebacker named Tom Cort, or Corte, depends on where you're from. He's from Michigan, played at Hillsdale, got drafted by the Pittsburgh Steelers, and he played 4 games for them before getting cut. Tom was one of those guys that he was just too small to play the inside linebacker position, and he was just too big to play a defensive back. You know, so he made tackles, he made plays, but as an overall, all-around, you know, NFL guy.
You mean, the professional
level.
Yeah,
he just was a little too short here and a little too tall there, you know. So he was one of those in-between guys, but he flew around, he made plays. So after our first game in Italy with him at middle linebacker, I was like, hey, you know, why don't you play some running back, you know? And he was all for it. And by the end of the season, he was one of the leadest, he led the league in rushing and in tackles.
Athletes are athletes.
Yeah. He never wanted to leave the field.
Yeah.
You know, so.
What is the language barrier like? It's, you know, well, you have translators?
In Italy, I had no problems with the language. I speak Spanish. I grew up here in Los Angeles. So, you know, you learn from a young age to speak Spanish. I took 6 years of it in high school. I grew up in a community that was pretty much a blend of Spanish-speaking people and English-speaking people. So when I was in Italy, I would just speak Spanish because they're very similar. And good portion of Italy, basically most of southern Italy and the Naples area, was once inhabited by the Spanish, you know, the kingdom and everything. So
Spaniards.
Yeah. So it was one of those things that if I would pronounce stuff in Spanish, the Italians knew what I was saying. Also, they all wanted to speak English. So it was tough for me to learn Italian when all my Italians were trying to speak English to me. You know, there was a few guys that were just like full hardcore. They didn't want to sell out speaking English, and they'd just flow the Italian at me, hoping I'd pick up on this and that. And I just look at them and smile and be like, yeah, yeah, I know. Okay, good. But now with the Danish in Denmark, they learn English from the third grade on. So they speak English perfectly, better than most people here in America.
More properly.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway. So it's like they learn German, Danish, and English from a very young age as their first language. And then as they get older, they learn a foreign language like Spanish or Italian or French or whatever. You know, so the people in Denmark, they speak four languages, you know, which impressed me a lot about Europeans in general, as they, most of them speak 2 to 3 to 4 languages fluently.
Well, you know? Let's hope they speak the language of violence, because that's what it needs to take to be a good football player, right?
Well, that's the thing. In Italy, they grasped, you know, the craziness. See, I grew up in football in the 70s. You know, I was born in the late 60s, so I saw a lot of craziness of football as a ball boy at the college level, at the high school level here in Southern California. You know, I saw some crazy stuff, you know, and in playing, I was like the last generation of the legalized steroid era, you know, where it was just like, yeah, we're going to test you, but we're going to give you a month's notice so you can clean your act up, you know. So I played with a lot of guys who were roiding out. I witnessed roid rage from the day one, you know, and basically since the time I quit playing football to the time I started coaching, a lot has changed.
Yeah, you go back and look in that late 80s era, and you talk to people from that era, and it's amazing how big they were. They're bigger now in some respects, but they were bigger back then, and they were more, how do you say this, mature in a lot of ways, where guys now are more have that bodybuilder sleek look, where guys back then were just more like freaking grizzled and willing to take things in their body and just.
Well, I think the whole CrossFit generation and the whole different approaches to working out over the last 5 years.
And the hairless generation being far as, you know, that's what's tricky.
Well, you know, I lived a Seinfeld episode. There was a Seinfeld episode where he was shaving his neck, then he went a little too low and got his chest, and then he had to, like, dedicate getting the rest of his chest. Well, I actually lived that back, you know, like 10 years ago, where I was shaving the neck, went a little low. I'm like, oh, shit, I better just go with it. And ever since then, you know, I've been a trim guy.
Because you know? if you shaved your chest back then, you were gay.
Yeah.
You were gay.
I could honestly say I was probably an OG metrosexual 10 to 15 years ago. You know, I'm not afraid, you know, to get pedicures or manicures or any of that stuff. You know, I'm from the iced tea generation, you know, where it's like you're a pimp-ass gangster, you know, has nothing to do with being gay. It means that you like to look good for the ladies.
Smell good and clean yourself
up. And I'm the
up.
Same way, you know. I like to tan. I like to keep trim. I like to keep my nails. You know, that's just how I am, you know. And the women love it. So, you know, I do for the ladies.
Well, it's obvious.
You know. So, anyway, and the ladies love it when I dip, too. So, if we're going to get a little promo for Grizzly.
For tobacco usage? How dare you? Open mouth tobacco? But so, okay, you just came back from San Francisco because you had to take some kind of...
Yeah, the biometrics test. The Danish government or the Denmark government requires all new employees of their country take a biometrics test. Now, I could have done it when I got there, but it would have taken 2 to 4 weeks to process before I would still be able to work. So to hurry up the process, the management of the team I'm taking over gave me a budget to go up to the Danish embassy in San Francisco, right there in the heart of the financial district, and take their biometrics test, which basically means is I take them all the paperwork of everything that I'm doing and my passport, and then they take my picture, and then they give me, you know, they do my handprints and all this and that. It's like if you were going to be a soccer coach in your community, you have to go to the police station to register.
Well, I do it all the time, yeah.
You know, the thing is the Danish woman that was there, she was good looking.
Of course she washed it.
And, I had my mom and my dog in tow. So it was just like one of those things like, do I ask her out, hang out, and then just put my mom in a hotel? What's going on here? So anyway, I just, I told her that she was, very attractive. And in a perfect world, we'd be dating right now. But then again, she's probably never dated an American football coach. So,
And hooked Dita up with the Great Dane.
Yeah. Dita is my dog, by the way. I rescued her from Ensenada. She's a good pup.
Oh, great.
She's a rescue pup. Hold on, these smelling salts, how long do they last?
And you're a rescue coach. Those ammonia smelling salts, they only last about 15 minutes.
This thing's done.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
This thing's done. Put it in my spit can.
It's a quick strike can. Yeah. You bring in, you're either in or you're out.
Yeah.
I'm glad I just introduced you some. You can bring them to your team. This is from America. This is from America. That's how
some
we do
drugs
it.
Really
Tom Brady. Tommy Brady does this. That's my Denmark accent. Tommy Brady. Tommy Brady
does
this.
That's more Russian Finnish right there.
I don't care. They're all the same.
I don't know. Don't tell that to the Finnish because they're the only country that's fended off the Nazis and the Russians.
They're all going to get swallowed up a global.
Because the Finnish, man, you don't want to fuck with those guys. It's cold up there, and they can drink 2-3 bottles of vodka and still look you in the eye.
You got to get your bicycle legs going in Denmark because that's all they do. They drive
around
bicycles.
Well, I'll tell you, man, after growing up in Los Angeles and driving a car just to blow your nose, it's going to be nice to take a break from driving. That's one thing I liked about Boston, where you're from, where you're a suburban Boston guy.
Yeah, what the fuck?
But when I went to college in Boston, I was just like, all right, I don't have to have a car. You know, there's a bus that goes from my footsteps to my building to my buddy's buildings. It costs 60 cents to take the frickin' bus. And that's one thing I hate about Los Angeles and growing up in California is the infrastructure here has always been set up for cars. And it's like, come on, we got to get over this already. But anyway, hold on. Smelling salts from the host. Hold
one,
on.
One, two, three.
Whoa. That burned my nostrils there, brother. What kind of show you're running here, young lady?
That's the whole point, kid. It costs freaking $3 for freaking a dozen of
them. Something you get at a gay nightclub in West Hollywood back in 1989.
You would know that.
I was DJing, though. I was just DJing,
This is why I bring you on, for this type of worldly knowledge.
Hey, I'll DJ wherever they pay me. So that's another thing about Denmark is the owner of the team owns a bunch of clubs all around Denmark, and I also DJ. I DJ a lot of techno music. And gives me an opportunity to spread my musical knowledge,
How many people go to those games?
Hold on. I just took another hit of your smelly salt. I gotta cool down my nostril hairs.
I'm glad I introduced you to something.
The Vila Triangle Razorbacks, they have a fan base of over 1,000 or more. So for each home game.
About a typical high school game here.
Yeah. Yeah, and the media is involved, so I'll have to talk to the media and do all this and that. But it's an underground sport, but it's popular.
They like the game. The people really like the game.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah. It wouldn't still be around if they didn't. In Europe, you have a lot of soccer hooligans.
Yeah.
All right?
Yeah.
So this gives the hooligans an outlet to beat on each other legally. Because I found it when I was in Italy that there was a lot of guys that supported AC Milan, Juventus, Inter Milan, and they hated each other or their clubs off the field. But on the field, they were brothers, but they also had an opportunity to beat each other up legally in practice or in games. And in Denmark, it's the same thing. You got there's a couple of popular clubs in the Vila area. And it's one of those things, all right, you're a tough guy. You want to go out there and beat up somebody from a different club. We'll get on the football field and see how tough you are. Because we both know that, football practice, football games is no laughing matter. I came up with a saying the other day where it's like, all right, your CrossFit to me is the easy part of football practice.
Right.
It's like, yeah, that's great. You're doing all that CrossFit crap. But it's just like, all right, now do that CrossFit stuff while getting punched in the face 60 times.
Oh, the liver and the kidney and the hands.
Yeah, everywhere, But it's just like, all right, that's great. And that's what's great about football. And utilizing these guys that are pseudo hooligans It's like, hey, if they're beating each other up on the football field like we do here in America, you know, the violence will be reduced to just the run-of-the-mill gangsters who are fighting each other over drug money or whatever. You know, not just fighting each other over because of their soccer club. It's like, all right, they get out there and they beat each other up on the football field. They're not going to want to beat each other up after the game because they're just so wasted tired.
What do you guys do to promote those games? What's the promotion like?
Well,
how do you get people out the game? How much do they charge?
Yeah, they charge around $10 a game, you know, for the general attendance. And I'm sure there's a reduced price for youth and for affiliated members and blah, blah, blah. But I would say that the fans, they get promotion through the local media, newspapers, through Facebook, through Twitter, you know.
You don't do any promotions yourself?
No, I will have to go out there and face the media. No doubt. That's part of my contract is going out there and doing stuff like this.
Well, just promoting the game. You
know, yeah.
What do you mean, this stuff like this?
No, stuff like this is going on the radio.
Yeah.
You know, and meeting cool dudes like this bro over here. You know, I'm sure there's the Danish version of you. You know,
because
there's the Danish,
Danish
version of me. So, you know, it's all
great
good.
Great Dane. It's a great Dane.
Yeah, yeah. You want some of the smelly salt? I got a little extra here.
I'm shocked.
It wakes you right up, brother. Yeah.
I'm shocked it's the first you've ever seen of it.
I've seen them. I just never, you know, did them before a radio show. You know,
so. Game day, kid. Game day.
Game day fever. Should I tell the audience how we met?
No.
No?
Screw that. No.
About how you play bass for my band, Rough 'em and Tough 'em?
No, because anybody who's listening to this show knows that story.
You've talked about it.
Oh, well, I mean, you know, they know who I am, so.
Yeah.
All that.
Anyway, this is a great idea. A little shot of Crown, anybody? Crown? Out there in Webcast Lounge?
When you were in Milan, did you get yourself in any trouble? Because it's got to be easy to get in trouble in Italy. And it's got to be easy to, you know, just have a lot of downtime.
The night before our first game, a friend of mine, Guido Duty Gorn, he's an artist, all right?
Hope he's listening.
No, he will. He had an art gallery opening the night before our first game. So I proceeded to go to this gallery and hook up with one of his girlfriend's friends. And, you know, it's one of those things. You're out all night. You're drinking.
Yeah, you're
having a good time.
American.
Yeah.
Big-looking G-Town, G-talented. You know, with an asterisk.
I was born this way. I can't help it. But anyway, I ended up, you know, it was a late night for me. A lot of drinking, a lot of Italian women running around.
A lot of pasta.
A lot of pasta. So anyway, I went to the game, and I was a little bit buzzed still from the night before, and the management and everybody didn't really like that. But you know what? We were picked to lose that game by like 50, 60 points. It was a struggle from the get-go, but I think it was like a 28-14 game.
All right.
You know?
I was going to say you won.
No, we didn't win. We didn't win. We were picked to lose by 60. See, the team that I took over, the Seamen, they were Division I up until 1990-91. They were owned by Giorgio Armani, all right?
The Giorgio Armani,
all right? His partner at the time really liked the uniforms and liked the whole aspect of football, and Giorgio's like,
and he
all
liked
right, Seamen. Yeah,
all over
exactly.
His
he liked
Seamen.
Yeah. So, anyway, in 91, he decided to buy a basketball team and get rid of the football team. So, after that, the team went to Division II, you know, because they couldn't afford to stay in Division I. They didn't have good ownership, blah, blah, blah. So, fast forward to 2010, and they have new ownership, and it's all the guys that played for Armani back in the 80s. And they're all older now, making money.
And you.
Yeah. So they hired Joe Avezzano, who's a retired NFL
and since passed away.
Yes, yeah. Yes. We'll talk about that. He was a special teams coordinator for Dallas Cowboys for years. I believe the Oregon State head coach for a while. You know, he got around. He has a reputation. So anyway, they hired him, but he couldn't come out in 2011, so they brought me out, you know, and knowing that they were going to bring him out the next year. So it was one of those situations where I knew I was only going to be there a year. You know, I would have liked to have been there for more than a year, but, you know, they already had it mapped out, you know. And the other thing is they picked their American players. Basically, it was one of those things, they hired me, and then 2 weeks later, I'm on a plane, you know. And so I had no really control over the Americans I was bringing. I had no control over the offense we were running, which was good, though, because I had a defensive coordinator. I had an offensive coordinator that I could appoint, you know, so I could be more of a head coach that oversaw everything. Whereas with this gig in Denmark, I'll be the defensive coordinator and associate head coach with Ken Saul, who is the head coach now and the starting quarterback for about 6 years. But he lives in Copenhagen, about 2.5 hours away. So he's basically grooming me to take over for him.
That's a really good situation for you where you can lean on someone else because to run a football team is not the easiest thing from both sides, especially when you have limited resources as far as getting assistance. And we watch pro football, we watch college football, and those staffs are enormous. But you go over to Europe, and it's really you, maybe one other American, and then some guys from the country of origin.
Yep, nationalists. I call them nationalists.
Right, well, that's an appropriate term. Yeah. But so that's a lot of stress, you know? So you lean on your marquee players, you lean on the guys you can bring in. Right.
Well, see, I think that's why they like Division III coaches, especially, you know, I'm coming from a highly academic institution where football is very low on the totem pole. So it's one of those things where I'm used to having to adjust to personnel, you know, because every week my personnel is going to change on me, you know, especially with a small team. And, someone who coaches at this level, Division III academic, where you maybe start out with 60 guys on the team, and by the end of camp, you're down to 55.
Oh, less than that.
Yeah, and you're having to play guys that, you know, played at one position, but you're like, well, you're second string, but you can be first string at this position, so we need to train you at it. So there's a lot of last-minute adjustments, and that's very similar to European football, as you have teams of 40 to 60 guys per team, but you might have, you know, 10 wide receivers, 10 running backs, you know, blah, blah, blah. So you're just like having to adjust your defense and your offense to what you have, you know. And coming from this experience at Division III academic is, you know, it's not a shock to me, you know, and I can do it.
One of the key things is that I've learned over the years is to pass on, you know, knowledge is you got to identify your athletes early.
Yes.
Like you were talking about with the kid who played linebacker and now he's a running back.
Yep.
The difference in skill is not that as much as people like to romanticize. You know what I mean? Like, oh, you're just a O-lineman. Yeah. You're just a D-lineman. There's a lot of transferable skills. You got to identify them quickly.
Well, that's the thing. As football, you're either a skill guy or you're a big guy, you know. You're either going to play the O-line, D-line, or you're going to play everywhere else. You know, there's mid-sized guys, you know, that should play linebacker, fullback, tight end types. But with European football, those same guys can play defensive back, can play wide receiver. You know, I got a guy coming with me, Spencer Bruce. He graduated from Wyoming last year. He's a tight end. He's 6'6", 225, 230 pounds. True tight end, slot receiver type. But the kid's physical. He's not afraid to block. He can get low, and he can block, and he can punch the 280 to 350-pound defensive lineman coming at him. You know, and that's key. And that's one of the reasons why we recruited him, was because his, you know, his ability to be physical. And that's another thing, because I'm putting him on defense. You know, he's going to be a five-tech. He's going to be a D-end, outside linebacker type, and he's going to be at all passing situations. That dude is going to be rushing the quarterback because he's 6'6" with his arms up.
And fast.
You know, and with his arms up, you can't throw over that shit. Go ahead.
Are you going to watch this year? Well, shit, you're going to be overseas, but this year's NFL draft, there are guys out there that you can identify, but you don't have a recruit.
Well, you know, I recruit those guys. You know, a lot of those guys that, you know, think they have a shot with the NFL, and then, you know, the reality sets in. It's like, okay, I can try to play arena, but that's a pass-oriented, you know, game where it's like running backs, fullbacks don't really come in handy. Go ahead.
Nice. Bit of advice?
Yeah.
If you can, it's going to be hard to do. It's going to be hard to do. But if you can, those ammonias don't.
They're addicting.
If you can, find a way to recruit basketball players, scholarship basketball players.
No doubt. No doubt.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, because they can move laterally.
Yeah, oh, they're big.
I mean, that was my advantage coming out of high school as an offensive line, defensive line guy. Was I played basketball for all my life, I can move laterally.
And you were scholarship to UNLV, right?
I got a scholarship to UNLV. I played my freshman redshirt year was Icky Woods' senior year. And rumor has it that I taught Icky how to do the Icky Shuffle, which is me, which was basically a bastardized version of the bus driver. But no, Icky and I hit it off. Thing was, when I came to UNLV, I was already well embedded into the hip hop or rap beatbox music scene in Los Angeles in the mid 80s.
Yeah.
So when I got to UNLV, I already had a reputation. So, you know, there was 90 guys on the team. I'd say 70, 75 of them were black, you know. So I was like, oh, we got to get that white boy who can, you know, rap and beatbox and
throw
do all
it down,
that.
Yeah, right?
Exactly.
IT generation, you said
exactly.
It earlier.
So I was like, when I met Icky and started hanging out with him and those guys, they were just like, they totally accepted me for who I was. You know, I'm still a preppy kid, white boy from the suburbs of Los Angeles, but I just like rap music. I like beatboxing, you know, all that stuff.
Keenan,
you know,
Bacardell as well, right?
Oh, Keenan and I were freshmen.
Yeah.
You know, he was starting when I was a redshirt.
Oh, great,
you
know, NFL receiver. Borderline Hall of Fame, not quite a Hall of Famer, but a great player.
Well, he played great player. 17, or let's see, he retired 15 or 16 years in the league.
Yeah.
Very quiet guy. And then they brought him back. The Redskins brought him back for a half a season, you know. And he's just one of those kids that, yeah, he should make the Hall of Fame, but he wasn't a loudmouth. He didn't brag a lot, but he was a consistent catcher.
Yeah. Oh, great receiver.
And he can take the hits, you know, because he was relaxed. You know, that's one thing I noticed about Keenan when we were freshmen is the kid, you know, he came from Houston. He just was a relaxed demeanor.
It's the X factor. It's the X factor.
Yeah, he didn't get tripped out by the fact that, there's dudes out there that are 100 pounds heavier than him that are going to come at him full speed and just knock him into the dirt.
And he would get up and pat the ball and go back to the
He was relaxed.
Yeah.
You know, and he just, go ahead.
It's like if you get into a car accident, if you're relaxed, you're gonna be
fine. No doubt.
There's a coolness factor that in football, there are players that have it. You have to identify and you have to see it. And you're saying Keenan Mercado had that relaxness factor.
Yeah.
Just boom. Just smooth. There's a rhythm to it. And just not getting, because when you're tight, that's when the shit hurts.
Yeah. When you tighten it up, when you see it coming, you know.
Yeah, in your bad position to get injured.
Well, that's one thing. I was always glad to be a big guy, you know, O-line, D-line type. Because that's a psychological head mess, you know, coming across the middle. I don't care if you're a tight end, wide receiver, whatever. You're coming across the middle.
Fear of the unknown.
Yeah, yeah.
In the line,
I give those guys credit.
In the line, you see what's coming across.
Yeah.
To an extent.
Yeah, and it's only 5 yards.
Yeah.
You know?
And the dudes are running across
but
the
I'll
middle.
Tell you one thing, as an O-lineman, as a player, I loved, because I played basketball all my life and I had pretty decent lateral movement, side-to-side movement, was hunting down those defensive backs, those guys that would run a 4-4 or a 4-3 or a 4-5-40, you know, and they'd look at me and they'd think, oh, okay, I can just, you know, get around this big, slow, white O-lineman.
Hard to hit,
you know?
Though. Hard to hit.
You know, but I would say one out of five, I would make contact with those dudes, you know. And I met a pro the other day. His son were recruiting for the college I work at, and I won't name drop or anything, but anyway, he was friends with the defensive back that I played with at UNLV.
No, please name drop.
Totally. I can't think of him right now.
Steve Atwater?
Steve Atwater was the guy that I met. His son's trying to go to the college that I work at. But it was Andre Dimery. You know, defensive back. I mean, the kid came out of UNLV running a 4-3. He was one of the very first four. It was him and George Thomas that were broke the 4.4 40-yard dash. But Charles and I had a special relationship because when I was a freshman, when he was a senior, I was on the scout team. You know, and we'd run all the offenses of the teams that we were playing that week.
Sure, sure. We know
so team. There was always the job of one of the tackles, you know, for run protection or run blocking, where we had to run down. We'd break off from the second level and we'd go to the third level and look for a DB to cut him off. Well, for some reason, Charles Dimery was like this guy that I always like.
Could get?
Yeah, had to go. No, I couldn't get him because, I mean, the dude is an NFL guy. But one out of five, you know, we'd run like 30, 40 reps per scout team, you know. So one out of five, I'd get him and I'd catch him slipping, you know. And they loved that about me, that I knew like what slipping meant and, you know, that whole gangster terminology coming out of L.A. in the 80s and stuff, you know. And so Charles and I had a mutual respect. So it's like when Steve Atwater and I met 2 weeks ago, he was like, "Oh, you know Charles Dimery?" I'm like, "Oh yeah, I know Charles Dimery." You know, so we had that special relationship. You know, so
he's, you go try to freaking trip him up. You got to cut block those guys. I don't know why.
Well, no. I would. That was the last resort thing for me. It was cut blocking.
Well, that's
because, like I said, I had that lateral movement for basketball, yeah. So I can move side to side.
Well, you just said one out of five times you're going to get them. You know, if you freaking cut block, but
see the other four,
space.
I'm getting them to reroute their angles towards the tackle. You know, so it's like ultimately you want to get them away from making the tackle.
True.
All right, so if you can get your hands on them and get them out of the play, ultimately, that's the ultimate. But if you can get them to reroute their, you know, their running or their angles to get to the tackle,
yeah,
or it's like if you know, ultimately you want to go inside of you,
yeah,
you know. So if you're going after a third level DB, you know, you want to aim for his outside shoulder because you want him to go inside of you, you know, because if he goes outside of you, then you can cut him, then you can, you know, get in his face. You know, accidentally get your hand up inside his face mask and pick his nose.
Make him run inside. Make him run inside. And that's part of my philosophy. Make the defense run inside.
Yep.
Get the running back or the ball carrier to get to the sideline. And as soon as they hit the sideline, turn it up. Mm-hmm. And get every offensive player to cut off the angle to that. No, that's the launching point. Does that make sense?
It does.
No, that's the launching point. And have that little fucking tunnel right up that friggin' sideline. Yeah. And that's where you're going to hit. And I don't think enough teams do that.
Well, it comes down to the running back, and he's got to let his blockers develop the blocks.
I'm saying develop them on the outside. Yeah.
No, but I'm saying, though, that a play is only as good as your running back can read it. You know, if a running back does not like to get hit, you know, he's going to go full blower into a hole knowing that he's going to get tackled and taken down. A good running back will avoid that hole because he'll let that block develop and he'll pop out left or right.
Who's the first position you're going to recruit for your Denmark team?
All right, we already got a quarterback. We got this kid named Tyler Benz. He has been the starter for Eastern Michigan for the last season, maybe the last two.
You can't find better than that.
Well, he's a pretty good kid. You know, he's a Division I guy and he's fresh, meaning that he just finished his season. He's got to graduate, so he's going to miss our preseason, our scrimmage, in one of our preseason games, which is okay. You know, we have good Danish quarterbacks, but Tyler is a great thrower. You know,
why can't? And I know they've tried to do it in official levels with NFL Europe, but why can't the European coalition, if you will, get players that are good enough to play in the NFL, but find them on certain levels, Division II, Division III
levels?
Well,
Europe, they don't have the same beef as we do.
As far as what?
Size. You know, they have skill guys can play receiver, guys can play defensive back, guys can play quarterback, running back.
Yeah, but they're little white boys.
No. They're soccer players or calcio or global football.
Same thing.
So they're trained from a younger age. If you have any athletic ability, you know, you're going to play that. Now, if you're tall, you're going to play basketball because that's another sport that feeds to the NBA.
Which is what I'm saying. Why can't you find Division III basketball players?
I'm telling you. Division or football players, that's why the NFL pulled out. My personal opinion is because they're not going to get the same size as they get here in America. You know, they're not going to get the 6'8", 330-pound guy who can run of 4.840 here in Europe.
Nobody's getting that anyway.
No, they're getting it in America. They're going to get better chances of getting in America.
CJ, I just spent 2 weeks watching the fucking combine at NFL Network. They're the elite. No doubt about
that. But you're not going to find that in Europe.
You can't find...
You're going to find receivers. You're going to find guys like that. But they are dedicated to the soccer life or the global football life.
Well, that's when you come in as a recruiter and convince them.
Well, we try, and there's a guy that plays at UConn named Thor, okay? I don't know his full name, but he's a Danish football player that is playing for UConn right now. I believe he's a senior, and he's a monster, and he has a chance of going pro, but that's like one in, so many, okay? Like I said, the diet is different over there. The breeding is different over there.
I consider that more of a problem of the process than the people. I think there are freaking athletes out there.
No, they are, but they all play a different sport. They're not, that's why NFL pulled out, was because they realized that to make good football players, you got to start them young.
You think so?
Yeah.
If you had a child.
Because the fundamentals,
You really believe that?
To an extent. Because there's an exception. There's exceptions to every rule. Okay? And I'll have a perfect example for you. I recruited a kid from London. All right? His name is James Perrineau. Okay? 25. Started playing football at 20. And whoever coached him up, I got to shake his hand, because this kid, as a D lineman, knows all the different pass rush maneuvers, knows his stance, knows how to get off, but then again, he's only 6'3 to 6'4, 280 pounds.
Only? Think that makes a difference?
Well, to be in the NFL, you need to be at least 6'4, 6'5.
You think so? As a defensive lineman?
Yeah.
You really
These days.
I just think speed,
Look at who you're going against. D linemen have the hardest position of any position on the field. Because
D linemen?
Yeah, because you're constantly going against 2 to 3 guys.
Quarterback's the hottest position.
Well, all right. As a thinker, yes.
No doubt.
As a physical position.
Quarterback.
A physical position, though. D linemen are constantly getting double teamed, triple teamed, and they're having to battle 2 to 3 guys every time. Am I wrong?
You're wrong in the fact it's much less thinking.
No, D linemen is
physically.
Yeah. Thinking's thinking.
Linebacker. Right?
But you don't get hurt thinking. You get hurt playing football.
Yeah, but if you're thinking, you're stinking. I just took that from last week. my guest last week.
We have an audience. Hello, ladies.
My guest.
We're talking football. I hope it's enjoyable to you.
It's the next show. God damn it. CJ, a little bit of professionalism.
I'm distracted by the ladies. I'm sorry. It's that guy's fault right there.
You're sidetracked. Where's your professionalism, for Christ's sake?
My professionalism's right here in the form of a sipsaw.
You went out the window.
It's done.
Anyway. Keep throwing those freaking ammonia salts. I'm glad it's here in Army.
But I'm saying quarterback is definitely has the most pressure.
Quarterback
has the most pressure.
He gets the ball every play.
No doubt.
He gets
but the center gets the ball every play. Yeah. And the center is going to hit someone every play, too. Yeah. Where the quarterback can go through a play without getting hit. So we got to split it up. The most physically demanding position versus the most mentally demanding position. Quarterback definitely takes the cake.
Not even close. If you're a good quarterback, you have a good team.
Physically, the quarterback can go 10 plays without getting hit. Depends on his O-line.
Yeah, but it's the 11th time.
It's the 11th time. But you know what? Everybody else is getting hit those 11 times. Listen to you.
Force per square inch.
Dude, you're a big guy.
No, I'm not.
You are. You're a linebacker. You play linebacker.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
You're a linebacker, so it doesn't matter Division III, II, or I. You're not a skill guy. You're a borderline skill guy.
How do you?
You're a big guy. You're a tough guy, Dave. You're a tough guy.
Hey, thanks.
I wouldn't be here if you weren't a tough guy.
That's why I'm wearing my Tumian shirt. All right, we don't have much time. How do you solve the concussion problem in the NFL?
Take off the helmets.
I agree. 100%, right?
Yeah.
Simple thing.
Take the helmets off.
Or make the helmets much more like Nerf.
Yeah, well, the thing is as soon as we started wearing helmets, people in football thought, oh, it's okay to use our heads.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking back in the turn of the century when Theodore Roosevelt was president. He wanted to outlaw football because there was like 20 deaths in college.
That's actually not correct. He saved it. He made the NCAA.
No. He, but through his actions
saved,
of wanting to ban it.
False.
He wanted to ban it.
False. Complete false.
Right, I'm going on Wikipedia right now.
Yeah, fuck you. Get off your phone. Get off your phone because you're addicted to your phone. But seriously,
I'm a social nerd.
You think if somebody gets up, if we get rid of the face masks.
Yeah.
I agree with you. Because people don't want to hit with their heads anymore, right?
That's right.
And they would just hit with their shoulders. It's big.
Well, you know, when I was a player, that's how we, as an offensive lineman in college. Now, by the way, I transferred from UNLV to Boston University.
We talked about this already.
No, we didn't get to BU, though.
All right.
Because I played for Tony Sperano.
All right.
Yeah. Who was my O-line coach, and we didn't get to that. But anyway, that's one way of teaching kids. We can't do it nowadays because of insurance or whatever.
Yeah.
But I was taught to keep your head out of play, take your fucking helmet off during drills.
Yeah.
You know? Take your helmet off during drills. You know, when you're doing your pass block sets and all that stuff, you know? Got to keep your head out of the game.
That's a fair point. Make the kids practice as well.
And we can't do that anymore.
Yeah, it's a backward logic. Everyone thinks that if you put helmets on someone, but that's actually the cause. It's the culprit.
Yep.
You know, because they have these weapons on their face.
Yep.
So they just stick them in there and, you know. Do you guys, have like a flag football league as well that you have to coach, right?
Well, no. Here's the deal. Every team is like a club. So the Triangle Razorbacks has a youth team. So they have a full pad team that plays, you know, between 18 and 21. All right. And when I was in Milan, we had a flag football team. It was like the 8-year-olds, 12-year-olds.
And you do that as well?
Well, I will coach that, yeah. And I'll coach up the coaches. That's part of the contract. Because we only practice Tuesdays and Thursdays, the Division I team. And so me and the American players will coach the youth team. You know, or at least we'll coach the coaches of the youth team.
And you're going to sit around and pull your putt and break in.
There's no pool putting.
2 days a week. What else are you going to do? What are you going to do?
Well, I'm a DJ.
Yeah, you know that. We talked about it.
Yeah. And so that's the thing is when I went to Italy, I was able to DJ. And now the owner of the Triangle Razorbacks, he owns a bunch of clubs, and I'm going to be able to DJ there, and I play all kinds of music. I'm a genre-neutral DJ or an open-format DJ, so I'll play whatever is appropriate.
Give me some of these songs on your pump-up mix for your DJ looks for your team. You have some pump-up soundtrack, right?
Yeah, you know, I like T-Pain and Fort Minor.
I don't even know what that is.
Yeah,
Civil War fucking monuments.
I could say anything right now, and you wouldn't know. but no, there's a lot of tracks out there that can get me pumped up.
Yeah,
it wouldn't matter if I told him he told you or not, because you wouldn't know.
I wouldn't know many of them. That's true. So when you get there, first thing you do when you get into Denmark?
They're going to take me to the grocery store and show me what the difference is between milk and yogurt. And then it'll take me about a week to process all my immigration and visa stuff. And then I'll be able to start coaching the team.
All right. Enough about Denmark. Enough about everything. Let's talk about NFL real quick.
NFL.
What do you think of Richie Incognito and what's going on with him in the locker room of the Miami Dolphins?
Well,
bullies. It's Have like you ever this. Seen a bully?
Well, it's like this. You know, I, as a freshman in a big program, in a culturally diverse program, you know, I got pseudo-bullied to an extent. But then, you know, I stood up for myself. I told people what I believed in. I made my statements known. And people quit messing with me. So the dude, you know, who quit the program and this and that, you know, I'm just like, come on, dude, you got to stand up for yourself. You know, it's like there's going to be a Richie Incognito everywhere you go.
Every locker room you go, you go.
And I've encountered those type of dudes. You know, I've been that type of dude now and then. And it's like, come on, you know, we all got to pay our dues. And if you can't take the take the heat, get the fuck out of the kitchen, you know?
True, and he did.
And it's
but
like
he did.
Everybody's trying to play this, oh, but he went to Stanford, a private institution, blah, blah, blah. Well, you know what? Stanford is a D1 football program.
One of the biggest in the country.
You know, and it's like, okay, they were ranked above the college that I work at by Forbes. And I would argue that my college is better because at Stanford, they got to let guys in that are dummies. You know, what I mean by dummies is under 3.5, under 3.0 GPAs. You know, so they get a lot of these guys in there that, you know, oh, I went to Stanford, oh, this and that. But you know what? You're still an idiot. You know, and if you went to Pomona, you wouldn't be an idiot. You'd be work. The guys at Stanford work for the guys that I coach at Pomona.
You think so?
Yeah, they do. They do.
You're brainwashed because I don't think so. Because I walk out of here and I go anywhere else and you, all right, yeah. Check off a box. Do you know Stanford or do you know Pomona College?
Well, that's the thing is Pomona's low key. Pomona's low key.
Yeah, yeah.
We're low key and we don't want the advertisement. Yeah, it's because we're running the show. Or they were. They are.
I guess.
Not me.
What do you think about gays in the locker room?
Hey, I don't give a shit. You know, if dudes want to be gay, you know, I've worked in Hollywood. I've worked on, you know, I have gay friends. And it's one of those things that, hey, man, if you want to be gay, that's fine with me. You know, I'm a straight single guy. So as far as I'm concerned, if everybody wants to be gay, that's cool. Because that means there's a lot of women out there available.
Would you draft... If you were GM, would you draft a gay player?
Well, it doesn't matter. If he can play, he can play.
But he has to play really well, right?
He has to play really well at the NFL caliber.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter if he's gay or straight. If he can play, he can play.
More so, though.
No.
No?
If he's equal to another guy that's straight, then we'd have to do other tests to figure out, you know, physical tests or football-style tests, figure out which guy would be better.
If you, yeah, know. Well, they do that. And then I talked again, about right, the program.
NFL is about making money. So if I had a guy that was gay versus a guy that wasn't and they were equal in ability, I'd probably take the gay guy because it'd get us more publicity and more ticket sales.
You're so gay. But yeah, see, but no, I don't think they should be. Look, it to me, love and hate are equal emotions as far as, you know, the yin and yang of things. You know what I mean? Love and hate are equally, and you can't tell people.
Yeah, but ticket sales is ticket sales, you know?
You can't tell people who to love as much as you can't tell them who to hate.
Yeah.
So if they want to marry, they being the gays want to marry, that's fine. But you can't tell the people not to dislike them because.
Oh, of course. You
can't tell people what to think.
No.
So,
I'm just saying, though, that if I had the choice, that's not your question, though. Your question was, would I hire the gay guy? And I'd say, if I had an equal ability guy, I'd probably hire the gay guy only because he would probably sell more tickets.
Yeah.
That's my answer.
Yeah.
You know, it has nothing to do with ability. If they're equal ability, you know, the gay guy would have the edge only because people would want to see the gay guy playing football.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I don't
know.
It's
a capitalist thing.
Yeah, right. Well, it's true, but
you know, the NFL is all about making money. We've known that from day one.
At this point, why would you take someone who's gay? Because you're gonna sell more jerseys, is what you're saying.
Yeah,
that's a fair point. Because no, it's I a mean, con,
it's, if the guy is equal ability wise to your next pick.
Take the gay guy.
Why not take
jersey?
The guy that's going to sell more newspaper articles?
Because controversy creates cash.
Exactly.
You know, I think I've said that 3 podcasts. Yeah. Controversy creates cash.
You know, it's like that in every sport, you know?
It is like that in every sport.
You know?
I've said before, I couldn't care less about the gays. I'm just glad I'm not one of them. That's all.
Oh, you're looking kind of cute over there, Dave, in your purple shirt.
I wish the Macho Man shirt. I wish I could see.
Step into a Slim Jim.
I wish I could say the same for you with your pits, your fucking, your pit stains.
I don't got pit stains. Shut up.
And your pea soup stains.
Yeah, I'm in a thong right now, folks. Sure? So just so you know.
Yeah, you're in a fucking thong.
Thong to thong, thong, thong.
Look it. Great to have you.
Thanks, Dave.
Good luck. I want weekly updates.
Awesome.
I want weekly updates.
I'll call in. Or Skype. We'll Skype.
Yeah, we'll Skype. Put it on the internet.
Can we get Skype on the air? Can we Skype?
Of course we can.
If he's Skyped?
Of course we can. Hey, I'm the Coach Falls on Twitter, Hard Yards LA. Later.